How does the bell sound in the on the mic? Sound okay?
Yes, I love it.
We had such a funny last Thursday night. Steve's in the Thursday group, and he had these bells that he'd gotten, and he kept gonging them for us, and we couldn't hear a thing. And then, what was it, Steve? There was an echo thing you put on?
There are all these like anti-echo settings in Zoom, and I guess I'd gone through and maximized them all. I mean, I've set them back up again because I think they help with the sound, but literally they obviously work very well because they completely filtered out the gong. Completely.
Completely. There was nothing. Did you have two different ones?
Yeah. Tried several times. I mean, it was funny.
I was reefing on that thing, and you know, it's like the windows were shattering and nobody could hear it. So,
all right. Well, so everybody here, this is a really important question Ramon just asked. Why is posture important? So I want to throw back at you guys. Why do you think it's important? And then I'll give you what I would say would be the main three or four reasons, but I want to hear from you first. Why do you think it's important? And think about your experience and what you've done. And
I think it's more for me personally about the habit of it. Like, because my body is habitually going into this kind of same posture every time, it's like I don't have to spend energy thinking about it. So it just feels natural and I can focus on other things.
Nice.
For me, I guess it's you know, too, from what I've read about the channel and connecting, and you want it open, and that's how you connect with your higher self. But that's also how I ground into Mother Earth is, and then run all of that energy through me. So you can't get energy through a bent tube. So that's what I guess that's my analogy. you can't suck through a bent straw, right? So
that's really good. That's a really good one.
I was going to say the discipline of it, but I hate the word discipline. But I do think it's kind of back to what Kelsey said about like the habit and the frame of mind.
You know, Laura, that is a really good point. I hate the word discipline either. Also, and there's a word in yoga, tapas. I fucking hate that word, right? Because it's like I associate with discipline. When I associate with heat, I'm fine. When I associate it with discipline, it's like everything in my watery fluid world that is like, don't fucking fence me in. Don't force me to do that. Cause you know, so I love this habit. Let's replace the word discipline with the word habit. And I like that. Thank you. And that's interesting coming from a Capricorn. Yeah. Yeah. So somebody else, you guys have great thoughts here.
Well, I was thinking about, I mean, when I first started meditating with you, was shortly thereafter, and you did a workshop on the chakras and planets. And ever since then, I've always just thought about, I mean, not consciously, but just, it's always kind of there, the idea that the way we sit helps to open up the chakras, like they're in a line in our body, right? And so it makes sense for our spine to be in alignment, in order to get them to open or to move energy through them. It needs an open channel. And so I picture my body being, you know, in that, it's like trying to help it out. Well, like, if I'm going to do this work, you know, then give it the structure to be able to do the work. So that's how I think of my posture.
So let me throw this out then. So then the question is, because this is a really, for those of us, especially for people with really long legs, crossing your legs is a habit, because it somehow, it feels good. We feel balanced. It's a lot of good stuff, a lot of good associated. Cross my legs. So why would it not be such a good idea in meditation to cross the legs? The way Steve is talking about. Okay. So Steve is talking about crossing them, like, you know, when you sit and you put one leg on top of the other like this, right? Steve, that's what you're talking about. Yeah. I don't know if you could see what I did. I may have been showing you the bottom of my feet for all I know. What you're talking about, Steve?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So we put them, you know, I can't do it with my arms. So why do you think that might not be such a great idea, given what we've just talked about so far? But you're muted, Kathleen. Yeah.
Because you're crossing the energy channel. I mean, in my mind, that's what it's doing. It's confusing the energy, and it's so it's not getting the direct message.
But it's your legs. Why does it matter?
Because that
I'm energy, throwing that out there. I'm just throwing that out there.
Okay, I'm just saying the energy. To me, the energy channel continues all the way down into Mother Earth. It doesn't end in my spine. That's a visual picture that we've put up for people to look at, you know, and here's all your chakras and here's your tube, but that tube really is running through you, through your head and into the earth in my world. So sorry.
I understand. That's totally fine. Yeah.
Yeah. So that to me would be crossing your legs then is crossing that channel. So, okay. Sorry.
No, that's fine. And so, but right. I mean, I don't cross my legs anymore. I cross them like this, but a lot of times when we teach kids to sit, we tell them to do Karen. You can't see my legs. Never mind. Crisscross applesauce. That's right. What we tell kids to do when they're starting to meditate, right? Crisscross applesauce. So why is it okay for the kids to cross their legs, but Steve to not?
Well, when you're sitting in that crisscross applesauce, your hips are still aligned, but when you cross your legs over, you've now done this with your hip bones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. And so it's not so much like if you're sitting in a chair or if you're ever leave, you know, somebody says, hey, show me what you do in meditation and they're sitting in a chair. You will ask them to uncross their ankles, right? Or to uncross their legs, put their feet flat on the floor. And that's along the lines of what Kathleen was saying. It's like there is energy that's coming up from the earth. There is a linearness that we want to attune to. So we want to just kind of move any obstacles or confusion or obstructions. So feet are flat on the floor, arms aren't crossed, ankles aren't crossed. The leg cross, the way Steve is talking about it, is what April said. It's because that shifts the energy this way. Now, if we're used to, I mean, it shifts the balance in the spine. And if we're used to sitting there and it actually, you know, you can sit, I could sit for 20 minutes with my leg crossed very comfortably, right? I sit back, I can do it 20 minutes. But there's other reasons the posture is important in meditation, and crossing our legs like that doesn't allow that next, these next reasons. Why is it okay to cross the legs when we're sitting in posture? Because at this point, when our ankles are crossed, what we've created such a stable base, and the stability is more important than the cross, than crossing the energy. And when you've crossed your feet, when you're sitting in a chair, it changes the posture in the legs, in the knees, and makes more strain on the back and the rest of the body. So these are all just little things that over time, people have learned that, I don't know, this may be a bad analogy, but it's like, you know, if you're taught to drive a car back when I was growing up, you were at 10 and 2. Your kids are all learning to drive like this because there's freaking airbags that are going to break your arm if you're at 10 and 2. So we had to change it and adjust it. But most of us drive like this, right? So there's the way you're taught. There's the way that they've said, okay, basically these are the best ways to sit for meditation. But ultimately, and you want to know them, but ultimately you're going to find what works for you. And Steve may find that those mornings when he's not sitting with me where I can see him, he's going to sit there on his couch and he's going to cross his legs and he's going to cross his arms and he's going to be so relaxed and so comfortable. He's going to be able to sit there and meditate with his Ishta for half an hour. And he's going to say, I don't care what Karen says. That was phenomenal. I didn't have any energy issues, right? So did I make my point? Steve, did I make my point?
So you did. So the point is well taken. So I understand the concept, especially of feet on the ground, find your seat, head tucked up, you know, that's one of your three things. So obviously that means flat on the ground, like others have said, there's some connection to the ground, there's some connection to the seat, and then I get the whole thing about this connection stuff. So that's one of the reasons why I assume that posture can be important. But of course, like you say, my argument would be, okay, my foot is flat on the ground, my spine is angled, but couldn't be more comfortable. It's slightly angled directly into my seat, and my head is, although it's a little bit of an angle, I feel quite
comfortable,
and I don't feel disconnected at all. So,
you know what?
Go ahead.
I believe too that it's all about intention. So if your intention is that you are connected.
No, I don't want to go down that road. That's not the discussion
today.
No, that's a rabbit hole. I don't want to go there.
Okay.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I don't want to go there. I'm teaching you posture today. So what I want to say to Steve is you're comfortable and you're doing it, but here's where be open. Because what will happen is your body at some point is going to say, you know what? I want to be up a little more. And if that happens, be open to it. And you will now know what to do because of all the discussion we had. You've got some framework. So I want to go back now to what Ramon's question was. Why is posture important? But so Brenda, first, what was your question or comment?
Well, first, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. I plugged them back in because I can't hear you guys when I have the headphones out. So I've done a lot of chair sitting and couch sitting as well. And my only suggestion, Steve, would be that the more you can raise your butt up, your legs won't want to cross as much because you give that little bit of that lift, you know? Because I'm right there with you, and I said it when we met, just the two, that, you know, we got to be comfortable, because it is, like we've said over and over, if we're distracted by hurt because we think we're supposed to be doing this a certain way. But there's also something to be said for, let's say I got some more pillows and more things, like I want to try and see what I can do, you know, to be more in that expected posture, you know, because really when you think about it, we've been talking about this for we've been all been here for 2 hours and I have not been sitting perfectly because I don't need to for all of it. I just want to know how to do it for when I need to, you know. But.
And when you start doing this, and I can't stress this enough, I mean, you guys do not understand, I was on a chair. And I can now sit still for a long period of time. I couldn't do this before. My body has gotten there on its own. It's gotten there on its own because it wants, this is why, Ramon, this is why posture is important, because a comfortable, stable posture with the spine erect and alert. It's not a tightness. It's an alertness. It's like I'm alive. I'm not dull. I'm not in my trance. I'm alert. But there's a stillness in the body. I'm alert. I'm awake. My body, when we have these points of posture that we've talked about, I can find stillness in my body. And for the vast majority, 99.9999999% of us who are not ascended masters, who can live in both worlds, who can literally live in that other realm and here at the same time. And they have retinues of people to tend them and take care of them. For those of us who live in this real world, this normal world, we want meditation, that path of turning inward, learning how to focus. We lose body consciousness. We transcend that body awareness, but we can't do it if the body's moving. We can't do it if the body's hurting. We can't do it. Well, even if your legs are falling asleep, that's really uncomfortable, right? So it's to find the stillness that we're awake, we're alert. Oh, and in that stillness, we touch that other place. We can touch those places. Okay, did I have another one? Stillness, lose body consciousness. Oh, and then, as several of you have mentioned, and this touches a little bit into what Kathleen's comment about intention. You do not, ultimately, it doesn't matter what your body's doing, but for now, the body open, the spine open, the spine straight, so the energy can move freely. The energy can move unobstructed and clean. That, it's not just about moving the energy. It's about as the energy moves, it's softening your karma. It's literally softening your karma, evolving you. And we're going to get more into that later on. But that's part of it. That's part of it. April.
Can I just, one quick thing. It dawned on me that I thought about this whenever I hear it. Whenever you go to the doctor and they take your blood pressure, he says, uncross your legs. And I think about that. Like, why does he do that? Why do they do that? He or she? It's because it messes with your blood pressure.
It puts pressure. And then it has to work harder and your blood pressure goes up.
Right. And so I think of that in a more spiritual sense with our internal energy flow, like the blood flow, allowing that to not have pressure, not have little points that it has to work through, allows it to. So I just think, uncross your legs.
April, you know what? I love that, because really then it's like, oh, if your legs are, it's making it easier. Yeah. Your legs are crossed, you're going to have to work harder. So we all want to work easier, right? Yeah. So any other thoughts? Anybody else have any thoughts in your experience or things that you've heard? And let's keep it with the physical body, the physical posture that you would like to share with the group before we move on.
What I want to share is, I've learned all kinds of, right, like why the posture is important. But now when I was thinking about it and you asked from your experience, right, tell us from your experience. So when I do, let's say, a Hatha yoga practice, your body wants to sit and be still. it's there. You don't have to, I mean, I don't know if you probably have had that experience after a hatha yoga practice, you just want to sit. And to me your body is prepared. It's like the vehicle is ready for that process versus, I don't know but that's really something I feel. And I know that Kriyananda suggests in meditate, right? When he talks about the posture, do a few poses and it doesn't take much, but just to create that openness. And then it's just there. And the more you do it, the more it's there, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's, I think it just feels better. That's it.
Well, and so whether you're doing, if you're, and this is, you know, to just kind of segueing us into the readings, I've given you a set of readings from Buddhism, Vipassana, which is, and the reason I chose Vipassana is because that's the undergirding. That's the tradition that has formed so much of what's current in the meditation world right now. And then we've got the yoga side. And the yoga side, both of them in their own way, encourage exercises or techniques with the body to build flexibility and openness in the body so that you can sit. And in the yoga tradition, asana, the moving the body, making the body more flexible, is like there's eight limbs of yoga, they say. That's like one, two, that's number three. Meditation's up here at number seven. But to meditate, we've got to be able to find that quietness and that stillness in the body. And so there we go. Did that answer it, Ramon?
Yeah. It answered it for what I need to know right now, yes.
Okay. All right. Good. Okay.
Well, I was actually going to ask that about, I read that too, about the doing the hatha, how do you say it?
Poses. Hatha, yeah.
And I didn't even know what that meant. So of our yoga people, maybe we can talk separately or something to be like, what would you recommend those poses be? Because I've done a fair amount of yoga, but I don't know what it's all called. And I don't know what I did and, you know.
Well, what I love about... I'm about to get derailed. Okay. Let me just answer that, which is when I was doing my training, I was required, I mean, encouraged strongly 3 days a week yoga, right? Which I did. And it made a huge difference in my body awareness and my ability to sit. So I don't require it as part of this at all because I figure I'll too busy anyways. But I will just say, yesterday Agnieszka did a little tryout class for a few of us on the staff here at Hamsa. And I could feel the difference today in my body. I haven't done yoga in years and years, right? So we are actually going to, through Hamsa, we'll be offering, Agnieszka will be doing a class for us. And then Gina, who some of you know, will be doing a class. And so we can have twice a week, hopefully, where you folks can come and do yoga in a way that will serve you as a meditator. Hmm. It's not power yoga. It's not gymnastics yoga. It's the yoga that will serve you as a meditator. And it was a beautiful class. So we're really excited. We're really excited. So actually, Agnieszka, I want to ask you, can you stay afterwards so you and I can finalize and talk about how we're going to do that? Okay. So one last thing I want to say about posture. This is for Steve, but for all of you. When we were on retreat in France with Kriyananda, the way the buildings were, they were these little huts, little two bedroom little units with big picture windows, right? And I would go over to see if I could talk to him, right? And you'd see in the window, and when he sat there meditating, he was meditating, but he wasn't sitting there in a sun like this. He wasn't sitting there at the table with his feet flat on the floor and his knees and his hips above his knees. He was sitting at his table. Let me see if I can get through all these cables here. He was sitting at his table like this. You see me? He was sitting at the table. He was just sitting there like this. No head tall, chin tucked, none of that. He was just sitting there. Why? Because he was at that point as a meditator where the energy, he was in his zone. Posture is a vehicle to get us there. He was there. The posture wasn't as critical anymore. So I've never said this to anybody, to a group before. I've never told anybody this before. But so I'm telling you this to give you permission to, it's about the meditation. Posture is a step on the way of our training. It's not the be all and end all of being a meditator. So I want you to learn I want you to learn how to still the body. I want you to learn how to use the body to help you find stillness, but I also want you to enjoy your meditation. And I want you to sit there. If you want to sit there with your legs crossed and your arms crossed and be in, you know, having a moment with your Ishta or moment with your breath or moment of just your heart smiling, think about somebody you love. Please do so. I want you to find joy because as Kriyananda said, at least I think he said this, but maybe I'm starting to look back going, exactly when did he say this, Karen? Maybe this is my interpretation. It's like no joy, no do. There's no joy, there's no do. And so we got to find the joy in it. So these are all the guidelines. But please, especially those of you type A types who are, and I'm not excluding me from this, you know, who say, oh, I have to do, if I do it this way, then I'm a meditator. It's like, nah. Find joy. Find joy. Start there. The rest will all fall into place. Find joy. Can I tell you this? I'll tell you a story then. You've heard this story, but I can't help but tell this story right now. Because I think this is one of the most important stories. And I probably already told it to you in this training because that's how much I love this story. But I'll say it again. So there was the abbot of the monastery and there were a bunch of islands, right? And so he would have his people going out to just check on the monks in the different islands, make sure everybody's okay and doing it right. And he kept hearing word back that there was this monk on this island who just was doing it all wrong. And he was sitting there and he would be doing his mantra and he would be going, and the monks are going, oh, that just grates on me. That sounds awful. Okay. And so he said, okay, so Sergio, you go out to the island, find the monk and correct him. Make sure he's doing it right. So the guy rolls out, comes to the island. The little monk is happy to see him. And the guy goes, Sergio goes, I'm so sorry. Actually, his name was probably Tanaka or something. You know, I think these are Japanese islands. I think it's a Japanese story. And he says, I just wanted to let you know that you've been doing the mantra all wrong. And it's really, and the monk goes, oh, thank you for telling me. How does it go? Okay. Thank you. And Sergio Tanaka now, cause that's the name I gave him today. was so full of impressed with himself for doing such a good deed and teaching this little monk how to do it right. And he was feeling very, very good about himself and what he'd done. And he leaves the island. He's rowing away, rowing away, rowing away, just feeling really good about himself. And all of a sudden he sees this thing. He sees this thing on the water and he's looking and it's the monk running to him on top of the water, coming out to the boat going, wait, I can't remember. What, how am I supposed to do it again? At which point our little Sergio Tanaka goes, never mind. You're doing it just fine. You're doing it just fine. The point being, if you're finding joy, I don't care how you sit. Yeah? Okay. So now we've really gone a little derailed, but this was great. We covered a lot of ground today. But I want to just break you up into groups now. And what I'd like you to do is to share with each other. You know, I had you, and if you didn't have a chance to watch these or pay attention to them, don't worry about it. Just join in the conversation and learn with the group. But I asked you to look at the section on the 7 techniques to release attachment, right? And you're probably going, okay, I'm doing these readings on mindfulness and meditation posture and these things. She's asking me what is the connection here? Somebody had that thought. And here's what it is you can't be mindful. You can't be present if you're attached to the way things were or attached to the way it's going to be. Letting go of all of those attachments is part of helping us be present in the moment. To be mindful, we need to be able to release attachment. Okay? So that's the connection. That's the connection. And so what I would love is right now is if we can go into your groups, and I think I'm going to put you in groups of, I'm going to put you in 2 groups of 5. Okay? And what each person is going to share, and you can share either what you liked about the thorn tree story. And when you think about the story, how you think about it, what part of that story just, you know, what is a picture that gets in your head that resonates with you about the story? Or when you were looking through the techniques to release attachment, which one was easiest for you? Which one you went, okay, yeah, I'm already doing that, or 2 that you said are already doing that. So you're either going to share thorn tree or the techniques that you already are doing that resonated with you. Yes. Or what it was when we were doing attachment that you went, not going there. Not doing that. That's fine, Karen. Not doing that one. Okay. Does that make sense? So you choose, but don't do, since there's going to be 5 people, I want each person to just share on one of those things. And if you don't mind, I'm going to pop back and forth between the groups. Okay. And it's not personal if I pop out in the middle of you talking. I'm trying to give myself a certain amount of time, like 20 seconds. Okay. So sound okay? Any questions on that? Everybody got it? Let's see if it makes 2 groups. All right, everybody. Please show up as an equal. Show up with your heart open to listen to other people and show up with the intention to be honest and real about you and who you are, trusting that this group is getting to know you and they want to know who you are. They want to know who you are. Okay. All right. See you in a few. Hey, everybody. was that kind of nice to talk to each other and have a little, yeah. Okay. Excellent. Hold on. Let me get back into gallery view here. So here's, that's all I wanted you to do was to just chat among yourselves, kind of talk about this a little bit. Tomorrow we're going to, and I think some of you are really looking forward to this. We'll talk more about the readings. But before we go today, I want to give you a little bit of a history of this whole thing and a little more understanding of why I gave you these two very different texts to read. So let's just on a very broad stroke level, let's just kind of talk about this evolution of this thing called meditation, or in some traditions they would call it contemplation, but it's, and there's a spiritual context to it, right? Which in the West, part of the mindfulness movement is really kind of taking a lot of the spiritual language, any religious connotation out to make it palatable to Westerners. But back when, this wisdom that we're learning, that we're studying together, this wisdom that this mindfulness movement that started in the 60s, that came to the U.S. in the 60s, in a most kind of beautifully, well, we'll talk about way, has informed the whole counseling psychology world. Because what they're finding is that a lot of the teachings that have been there in the yoga tradition, in the Buddhist tradition, is very applicable to what the psychologists are learning. And so we're finding right now a real merging of these fields. And a lot of the mental health world is discovering things that really the meditators have known for a long, long time. But there's needs to be a way to bring that into the Western ethos, right? And so taking the religion, the spirituality out, bringing it more into the counseling mental health world is how a lot of meditation is becoming part of 21st century United States, Western Europe. So just on a real general level, what might be nice to just have some context for is that think back like 5,000 years ago. And there were sages who were living up in the mountains, and they just experimented with sound, with consciousness, with the mind, with this, with the body. And they tried things and they said, oh, look, if I sit here and I just make the sound, it has this effect on my body. It has this effect on my mind. Hey, if I put the sounds together and I go, oh, it has this effect on my body and this effect on my mind. Oh, if I do this posture, if I do this, oh, it has this effect on me. Ooh, you know, if I have thoughts I'm trying to find a neutral-ish word to describe thoughts that are, self-centered. Let's use that word. Really about me, thinking all about me, my body kind of tightens up. But if I think about other people, my body opens up. And we call them the rishis. They were the original experimenters who were learning wisdom that merged the spiritual, the unseen world, the laws, the ways the unseen world worked with the earth, the laws of the earth world. And the way we think and the things we need to do to survive. And these teachings little by little became written down, and they were written down. And this is really important They were not written down the way we write books today. They were written down because it wasn't easy to write something down. Three words. Like, isn't that interesting? But isn't that interesting actually had all of this wisdom around it. So it was written down in pithy little statements. And then, because they needed to remember it, they started making little three of this. It's like I gave you this thing. Seven techniques to release attachment, right? There's three points of your posture. There's four things that are going to cause you misery. There are these five things. If you do them, you're going to feel great. There are these five things you should stop doing. And so these lists and lists and lists started happening because that was where there was very little written learning. It was all oral. And so if you're in an oral teaching, there's repetition. Let me give you this list. And every time you come to see me, I'll repeat these three things. And after a year or two, you'll remember those three things. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So these lists, these pithy little sayings come out of an oral tradition. And I don't want to say it's arbitrary, but I'm going to say it's kind of arbitrary. I mean, think about it. Let me think. Most of you have either kids or pets. You have either kids or pets, right? And you want to make a point to your kid, you're going to look at them and you're going to say, there is only one thing I want you to do. One. Just one. And that kid is going to think the only thing that's important for them to do is to take their plate back to the sink, right? Well, down the street, the next parent is saying, there's only one thing I want you to do. I want you to make your bed. I want you to make your bed. So that kid thinks it's like my bed. And then around the corner, there's another family. And they're saying, there's only one thing I want you to do. I want you to close your mouth when you chew. Okay, so now these three kids go out into the world and they carry that teaching with them. The teaching that was important to their parent, to their family. The teachings you get are the teachings that were important to that teacher. Now, let's take it one other step. There's two kids. And one kid is an artistic in his head, just always creating stories and beautiful things like that, right? Very rarely able to just kind of do the physical things of life. The other kid is totally into sports. All that kid wants to do is get out there and kick the can, kick the ball, get up there, climb trees and swing through the trees and do stuff like that, right? And the wise parent looks at this and goes, okay, that child needs a different instruction from me. That child needs a different. So the same teacher says to artistic soul, sweetheart, it's really important for you to slow down, bring yourself back into this present moment so that you can remember to eat. Right? Slow down, pay attention to your body. I know it's natural for you to be up there, but every once in a while, just come back, pay attention to your body. And if you're feeling this thing in your stomach, that means you're hungry. And so I want you to make sure you eat a sandwich. Okay? That's what that kid needed. Other kid. Out there playing. Teacher looks at that, parent looks at that kid and goes, you know what? I think what's really important for you is to develop this real ability to sense what's around you. Because sometimes you're out there and you're swinging through trees,
and it's great, but you know, you come into the house, I got grandma's china, been handed down for generations. You go swinging around my living room and you break it all. So let's teach you to be really aware of what's around you and to discern when is it okay for me to fling all over the place and when do I need to just go outside and swing. Do you follow what I'm saying? Two completely different students, two completely different teachers. And what happens? Those students go out and they say, my teacher was Sri Happy Happy. And Sri Happy Happy told me that I need to be very aware of my surroundings. That's the important teaching. The other student is out there saying, Sri Happy Happy is my teacher. And Sri Happy Happy told me that it's very important to be aware of my body and what is going on and pay attention to those sensations. Both are aware of their body, but in very different ways. Are you following me? Mm-hmm. So these are the teachings, and they have come down from teachers to teachers, and there are a lot of teaching out there. And here's what happens is be aware of what's around you is saying, this is the right path. This is the way. This is the way. The other one's going, no, this is the way. This is the way. And everybody's out there telling you, this is the way. This is the way. This is the way. And it's the only way. It's the only way. It's the only way. So the Buddhists, theirs is the only way. The yogis, theirs is the only way. The Christians, theirs is the only way. It's like, you gotta let it go. And what I want you to understand is everything came out of something. And I apologize if I'm popping anybody's bubble here, but nobody got the direct word from God. You know why? Because there's 40 million people. And so there's 40 million different ways that people need to learn to live, to function. There's not just one way. There's not just one way. So what I want to do is start us off by recognizing that every teaching we have came from some human being's priority system and value system.
Thank you, Karen. I innately knew that, but I just, you saying it somehow like that just sort of like gave me permission to really accept that. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. Find what works for you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Find what works for you. And that's what this class is about. Okay. So we have Bhante, our mindfulness in plain English. He's giving us one set of teachings. Fernando's over here giving it from another perspective. Somewhere in here are the nuggets that relate to you, that will speak to you. And I want you to find the ones that speak to you. I want you to find the ones that speak to you. Do not ever spend another second. Okay. I don't want to say it that categorically. That may not be right. So I don't know if this is true or not, but I'm going to just suggest, try this, see if it works. I'm going to suggest don't ever, 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 ever again, ever, ever, ever do something because somebody told you so. Don't take their word for it. Find out for yourself if it works for you. Find out for yourself if it works for you. And if it does, great. If it doesn't, don't fucking do it. It's just that simple. Because you're sitting there going, well, it's not working for me. I must be doing something wrong. No. No. And how did I learn this? This is I learned from Kriyananda. And I didn't learn it because he said it to me as bluntly as I just said it to you, but he said it like this. We were in a retreat And he says to the room, you know, we're not talking hundreds of people at Kriyananda retreats. I mean, these are intimate settings. You know, there may be 80 people there, but it still feels very intimate. He has a way of teaching that you feel like you are, and I kid you not, I can tell you stories. It's like he's reading your mind and he's teaching to you. It's bizarre. Some point I'll share these stories with you. But he said, he's looking around the room, and this must have been a disciple meeting if he was saying that. And he goes, so, he just looked around and he goes, so are things going better? Is your life getting better? Are things going better? And he says, if they're not, then maybe you need a different technique. Maybe what I'm teaching you isn't working for you. Wrap your head around. This is your guru saying to you, if it's not making you happier, if this isn't working, then maybe this isn't the right technique for you. And I'm giving you permission to go find something else. I'm not just giving you permission. I'm encouraging you. Go find something that works for you. I mean, if any of you come out of any kind of Christianity, man, or any kind of occult situation, anything like that, that's freaking mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing. So that's what I want to leave you with today, is when you do these readings, when we talk about these readings tomorrow, please own it from you. Just because Bhante said it, just because Kriyananda said it, doesn't make it so. Doesn't make it so. Doesn't make it so. What that you read in there, did you see that you said, oh, I recognize that. Oh, that makes sense to me. Do you hear what I just said? I recognize that. That makes sense to me. That's what I want you to share with us tomorrow. What did you recognize? What made sense to you? And what I'm going to love is if one of you comes in and goes, this made sense to me. And everybody else goes, oh, I didn't get that. That didn't make sense to me. And the one person who said it made sense to them goes, yeah, it made sense to me. And what we're going to do for each other is we're going to sit here and we're going to go, I'm so glad it made sense to you. I'm so happy it made sense to you. And I'm going to try and understand why. Not to change my mind, but just to understand you. Do you hear me? That is going to change your world. If we can learn to go, I just want to understand why. I just want to understand why. We don't have to agree. We don't have to even understand. We just want to hear it. And I'm telling you, this is it all right here, right? Let me finish telling you the rest of the story. Okay. So fast forward in these 5,000 years around in this, and it's really quite remarkable. Within 500 years, there'd been this tradition. We call it yoga. The yoga comes back from at least 5,000 years ago, 8,000 years ago, these teachings started coming in. And then around, within 500 years, two really important teachers come onto the planet. Buddha, but not Buddha. Shakyamuni, a man, a human, born into a wealthy family, raised with all the yoga teachings, and he sees suffering, and he sees the things that are going on in the world, and it troubles him, and he wants to understand what is going on. And in the process of him wanting to understand what was going on and why is there all this suffering? How can this suffering be eased? He realizes a couple key things. He realized that the world life is about suffering. This earth life is about suffering. We're going to get sick. We're going to grow old. We're going to die.
Now you may not get sick, but you're definitely going to grow old and you're definitely going to die. And these things cause suffering for us. We get attached to people. We lose them. We resist the things that are difficult and it makes for more suffering. And he realizes this and he starts to share this. That yes, there is suffering, but you know what? There's a way out of suffering. There's a way out. We can change the way we look at things and we can find a way out of this suffering. And he started sharing those teachings. So he took all of these yoga teachings that he had been, that were working, and he added a new dimension to them. He framed them in a little different way. It was like, there was the family number one where what was most important was to take your plate to the sink. But Buddha said, you know what? No, yeah, but you know what? Now let's start to chew with our mouth closed. Let's try doing that. And he started adding, he added another element. That wasn't the best analogy, but you know, he had another element that he started teaching. So now we've got the old yoga traditions and we've got the Buddhist interpretation. Meanwhile, in the West, we have a Judaic tradition that had come down, that had taken this idea that there is one God, and these were the rules that we needed to live by within this culture. And around the same period of time that Buddha is kind of shifting the yogis, Jesus comes along in the Christian tradition and says, you know, I think we're missing something here. Now they say that Jesus actually traveled, it's not that far, traveled east. And a lot of the teachings of the rishis and the yogis, he was exposed to. And if you look at his teachings, there's a lot of similarity. And I'm not talking about the Ten Commandments. I'm talking about simply his biggest teaching, his most important teaching was a teaching he gave as he died, where he said, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. And he said, it was for this that I came. I came to teach you this, everybody. We've got this Judaic tradition, but you know what? There's a lot of unforgiveness going on. There's a lot of judgment going on. So let's bring a little twist to it. And what he taught was forgiveness. Forgiveness. To love each other, forgiveness. So now we've got these traditions and let's fast forward a couple thousand years, you know, Christianity is spreading, Buddhism is spreading, the whole yoga, Hindu, we call it Hinduism, but I tend to use the word yoga because yoga, the yoga study we study is not Hinduism. And Judaic tradition, Christianity, everything's traveling around, right? Well, then this marvelous moment appears in time called the 1960s. And mind you, people have been traveling to East, and in the, I believe in the 1800s, early 1900s, late 1880s, that period, people from the East, these teachers had started coming into Europe, coming to the West, bringing these ideas of yoga. And they were new ideas. We had the transcendentalists. The ideas started coming West, coming to us. So let's fast forward through all that. In the 60s, there is this group of young people from America who went to India and Burma and Thailand. And you've probably heard of some of them. You've heard of Ram Dass, who wrote Be Here Now. Or maybe you haven't, but you know, at some point in the course, we'll study him. And then there were these other, and Ram Dass is one everybody knows up yet because he was into psychedelics. He was doing psychedelics and he went to India because he wanted to know, how can I do this without psychedelics? How can I feel like this without psychedelics? And he met his guru and He gave his guru, I don't know if you know any of this, he gave his guru some acid. Because his guru wanted to know. Nothing happened to him. Nothing. Nothing. Because he was already in that space. But what he did was he knew all about Ram Dass. He knew about his, I think his mom had just died. Ramon, was it his mom had just died? Does anybody remember that?
I remember.
Yeah, it's something like that. And Ram Dass had this moment and he realized that what he'd been seeking through psychedelics was possible through meditation. Then after him, we had people like Jack Kornfield who went to Thailand. We had Sharon Salzberg and Joseph Goldstein who went to Burma and studied with a man named Goenka, who is supposedly was teaching the original teachings of the Buddha in Pali, which is the original language the Buddha spoke, right? And these, and then my teachers in my Tibetan teachers also in the 60s went to India and Burma, right? And they learned this stuff. They were exposed to this stuff. And of course, we all know the Beatles went and, you know, da, da, da. But they started coming back and they started teaching. And they started bringing all of this wisdom at an opening, at a portal in the world's consciousness where we were open to it. And many of you were not alive in the 60s. Who's part of the 60s besides me? Okay, a couple of you. Okay. The 60s were a magic moment where these teachings just kind of whoom, flooded in. In a way that they became translatable. We call this a bridge. These teachers are a living bridge to a tradition that has worked for millennia, but they have come to translate it for us to use in the 21st century today. My teachers are all bridges. Ram Dass was a bridge. I was on a call. I just got a few seconds. Oh, I'll save it for tomorrow. I'll tell you about that tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll finish this little story. But I wanted to give you some context as you read your readings now, that you are reading the readings of bridges. They are bridges between the wisdom that is real and speaking in language that we can understand it today and apply it today. Okay? So tomorrow you're going to do more of the talking. Let's close with a quick Om Shanti and we'll get you out of it. We got 10 seconds. Ready? Set. Find your seat. Inhale. Om Shanti. 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 All right, loves. I hope you enjoyed today. I hope it was informative and fun. And we'll see you tomorrow and we'll talk about the readings, okay? Bye, everybody.
Bye, Karen. Bye, guys.
Bye, everybody.
All right. All right. Oh, wait. Let me stop the recording.